And she said to a lady that had extended her some credit, ah, mutilowo lady, see, titi ma booking somewhere for her. Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what she said.
That's where we left things in part one. Laughing, remembering, and reflecting on our mom's resilience. Welcome to Life's Riches, the podcast where we explore the moments, money, and memories that shape what it really means to live a rich life. I'm your host, Aisha. This episode is part two of my conversation with my big brother, Hamzat, one of the few people who's known me from the very day I was born. If you haven't listened to part one yet, you might want to go back for the full story. We talked about family, childhood in London and Nigeria, and the resilience of our parents. In this second part, Hamza opens up about what happened next, moving back to the UK, the realities of starting over, and the money and life lessons that came with it. It's honest, layered, and reflective, a continuation of the family story, but also a mirror for anyone navigating transition and growth. Let's jump back in.
So I remember that much, you know. One of my wishes is that I'll be able to go to her grave and to dad's own also. I hope time will not betray me. You know, man always hopes and he thinks that he has time on his hands. What else do you want to know?
So let me ask you this. Or let me go back to what I said I wanted to talk about. You know how you said, when you first came, you didn't know what you were doing. You were buying Ralph Lauren, buying clothes. I think a lot of us are like that. And when I came as well.
When you say us, I mean we, well, six kids.
I think most people. Who've come from Nigeria here, unless they've come into England and they have some guidance, right? We tend to go crazy, and then your first time getting your hands on credit cards and all of that.
We don't want to go down that street.
We don't have financial education.
Okay.
For example, I saw mom counting money. I saw her doing business. But it wasn't like she was talking to us and saying, this is what we're doing. And we knew there were financial difficulties, but it wasn't shared with us, right? So you get here, you've gone through the struggles, you've done all of that, and then you get here, you get your hands on money. Of course, you're going to go wild.
I think for our parents, they didn't explain. Having a credit card, having a bank account, all new, you know, financial freedom. You know, when I was coming, Uncle Jai wrote me a check. Daddy wrote me a check from his Lloyd's Bank. You know, when I took the check there, they were like looking at the check and like, what? But in all, and you have to give the British society some kudos. They honored it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they honored it. They took it to the back. And
Daddy still had money in it.
Yeah. He wrote maybe about £70.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, Lloyd's Bank. In the Neasden Shopping Centre. That's where I went. And they honored it. Can you imagine Nigeria? Daddy says, I have 10 million naira. I mean, look at, you know the story of Daddy's savings account? When I tell people that story, they laugh and laugh and laugh. You know? They honored the check. I was like, this is my dad's check. Could you honor it? I would like to open a bank account here. And they said, you would like to bank with us? Okay. We'll deposit this.
So it's that whole thing about...
Financial literacy.
And I've listened to a few podcasts by Nigerians who say similar things. They've come here and they've gone crazy with the money. They've now suddenly been able to get their hands on. And I'm like, I thought I was the only one. Because I also had all this credit card debt and whatever. I should know better, but hey, it's what it is. It's like, free money. I used to buy the Bali shoe sales. I'll go to Russell and Bromley. I bought for myself. I bought for the children. You know, in fact, I still have a new pair of shoes that Bode didn't wear.
Wow.
You know, a baby size shoe.
Oh, wow. Russell and Bromley.
Russell and Bromley. So I did all of that as well. And a lot of us are in the same boat. I believe we had that, but it's about, okay, we needed to learn. And it's about getting past that phase we were in of the excitement of having access to money and then walking our way to a better place and managing money in a better way.
Remember the year that you and I spent on campus?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember one afternoon I was hungry and my eyes were almost bulging out. But remember that my room was almost like behind the female hostel where you and Ramat roomed together. And one afternoon I just came out and you said to me, what was I doing? And then you said, oh, you cooked.
Okay.
I don't know whether you can remember that.
I can't remember that.
And you said, do I want to eat? It was as if I was eating manna from heaven. Biola, I could have robbed somebody. I was hungry.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You know, the thought just came to me one of these days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thank God for my sister and Ramat. Both of you had cooked. And then you said, oh, I don't know what made you remember me or something, you know. So that is one. The other question I wanted to ask, that now that you have this wealth of knowledge with financial literacy, has it rubbed off on your kids?
Oh, it has. It has. And surprising, it's interesting because, so, you know, I've worked in finance for quite a while.
Yes.
And I was responsible for the finances of large charities and stuff.
What's the largest account you ever handled?
I've done a 3.6 million manager's 3.6 million budget.
Oh, wow.
I've also, there's a 10, was that 10 million? No, I don't know, 10 million naira or $10 million. I can't remember. There was a grant I managed when I was working in Nigeria.
Oh, really?
Know? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in my Calabar job.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had a grant from, what's the name of, I've forgotten the name. I can't remember, it was USAID or UN. Can't remember which of them it is. Anyway, I did all of that, you know, talking to trustees, talking to CEOs and all of that. Oh, this is what we need to do. This is what we need. But I wasn't really applying it to me.
Okay. Right?
But interestingly enough, I hear the kids saying now, Mom, but you know, we can't do that. Mom used to say this. Mom used to say, I'm like, really? I have no recollection of actually intentionally teaching them that this is what should be done. So now when I'm working with them, I'm saying, oh, you know, you should invest here. They're like, yeah, yeah, Mom, we know. Yeah, Mom, we know.
Okay.
You know. So we actually now have conversations rather than me saying, do this. We have conversation and explore things. One of them is more receptive and willing to do. The other is still at that phase of they have the knowledge, but they're not really implementing. And I'm sort of like constantly, remember you have to do this, remember you have to do that, you know, because I know when you're young, you think you, like you said, you think you have all the time ahead of you. And money might be here today and it might not be there tomorrow. So you have to prepare for that time when it's not there,
okay,
you know, hoping that it will be there, but also preparing in case it's not there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's one area I'm really passionate about. I really want to work with young adults, especially those who are just stepping into the world of work, just so they're starting out right.
In talking about life, I would say I think you have been able to accomplish a little bit of what I want to say. And that is live life to your fullest.
And, you think so?
And this is what I mean by that. You've been able to travel. You, even if it meant you packing, saving, you've been able to go places. I remember you coming over constantly with Addie. I remember going with you in New Jersey and her lovely jacket at least once, twice. I remember us having a holiday in New York,
The
right?
Rockefeller experience with Adia.
That we went skating. Baby came, he came to California, and then and I remember Segun coming over. I remember Amani when Amani was so small, I remember his Segun and his wife coming over, but I admire you because living in Europe, I think it's cheaper to move around than out here. Out here, it's unless you have a good job, an excellent job, then you won't feel it. You can take vacations. Even over here in America, if you go on vacation too many times on your way back, the customs will be like, "What do you do? Where did you get the money from?" And blah, blah, blah. But living in England, and I admire that at least you will have those memories that you and your kids, you did this, you did that. I have some memories of Daddy taking us traveling with us and going to Ibadan. Where else did we go? Uncle Issa, we went to Guinea-Bissau, went to Kanji Dam. I don't know
I
whether you
remember
remember
that.
that.
I remember the Kanji
You
Dam
remember
trip.
the Kanji Dam.
Yeah. I
So,
remember that we went, I can't remember exactly where, you know, the something around the Yoruba tradition, oh, I
one
can't remember
museum
what.
that we went whereby there are lots of carvings, images
Yeah.
in a.
That one was it was that the Idofion
No, that's not.
museum or
Ilu something. Iludun or somewhere. Yes,
Iludun Road,
somewhere
yes.
in Kwara, on the way to Offa. Yeah, so
It's lovely having this chat. So let me ask you, these are four questions
okay.
I'm going to ask all my guests. I've already answered the questions. What does a rich life mean to you right now?
A rich life to me would be not to worry about money. A rich life would be not to worry about a roof over my head. A rich life to me would be to be healthy. A rich life to me is happiness at home. My wife, should she want a bag, maybe I can afford it. I've been lucky enough that my wife doesn't ask me for those kind of things because she realizes I don't have the means to get it. But a rich life really isn't about material things. But this is funny. I have this dream that I want to buy a private jet, and I'm yet to pay off my car. But if wishes were horses, even beggars would ride. But it's not a bad thing to dream.
Dream, yeah.
If the time comes, will I be ready? So a rich life to me, all my nieces and nephews, I would like to be able to not only be charitable, but spend time with them. Lord, give me money, give me wealth, that I am essentially responsible. Even you, if I have the means, you shouldn't lack anything. But we wish, but life is not always like that. And I think this podcast, you and I talking and going down memory lane, I'm sure there's still many more things
Oh,
that
there is.
one could talk about,
There is.
and maybe eventually we'll get.
Just scratching the surface
Okay. Yeah.
to start things off.
Well,
I wanted to ask about
Money.
Yes. And I suppose the question I have for you is, sorry, let me just respond to what you said about what life riches means to you. And, just to summarize what you've said there, sort of ties in with what life riches means to me right now. And it's right now because I think we evolve with time. For me, it's the people in my life, friends, family, people I've met along the way, some who I still carry along and some who have left somewhere along the way. So people, experiences, books,
Oh,
and money.
books. Books and money.
The money, not so much the money itself, but what it enables me to do. And of course, it goes without saying my faith.
Oh,
You know,
your
so
faith.
yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, and one thing I'm coming to realize as well is that time is a richness because for every minute that goes past, we're never going to have it back. So I'm realizing that in the minute, you've got to appreciate the time you have and do the best you have with it because you're never going to get it back. You know, so yeah, so that's. And that's how I'm feeling right now. Tomorrow it might be something else. You might ask, I might have answered the same question, but includes different things. So, but in a way, you've captured all of that, but in more detail.
I find, earlier on you said to me, what you can say your prayers. In regards to faith, I will say this to you. When you say your prayers, in as much as it's true that time cannot be redeemed, but if you have faith, you can ask God to redeem time for you.
How so?
Okay. It's true that when you get to a certain age, you begin to look backwards and not, you're just like, okay, I've had a good life and everything. But certain things, you might have not accomplished certain things. And if it has been destined that you're going to accomplish those things and time is running out, age, financially, you can still ask God, give me the strength and redeem time for me so that the things that you've destined for me, I can do them in a different way. That is what I mean by you can ask God to redeem time for you. If God says you're still going to have children, what is the essence of you having those children and then you die tomorrow? That will has been fulfilled. But what should go along with it is that not only should your will be done, but redeem that time
Time
for me.
for you.
And unfortunately, I'm not a scholar of the Quran, but of the Bible, it is constantly said that God is able to redeem time. So, and I believe in the Quran also, it's the same God anyway, that if you don't ask him to do it, he might not do it for you. So, that much. Let me ask you this. And I really want to be careful how I ask the question. Do you think in any way your faith has held you back in life?
I don't think so. So, you know how we grew up. Dad was very religious, do this, you've got to pray five times, you sit down there and pray and all of that. And I used to say it's only because of God's will that those of us that have remained Muslims. Because if you go by the way Dad took the religion, it was enough for us to say, oh, we don't want this, that this is, do you understand? So I used to say that. But I left home when, I don't know, I can't remember how old I was when I was left home, maybe about 20, 21 or whatever, and I think within a year I had Adi. So,
okay.
And in that time, I was living. I wasn't about, yes, I'll say my prayers, but not the five times. I would fast during Ramadan, that much I always did. But I didn't in any way see, and I would pray. That's how I knew to pray. And just reflecting back now, I didn't feel like I was like, oh, my religion says don't do this, or my religion says don't do that. Of course, some of the foundation that had been laid in our upbringing stayed with me, but I didn't see it as anything restricting me. And I feel like I haven't really come into being, I don't know if being religious is the right word, because it's not really being religious. Because even when my kids were growing up, I would read the Quran and I would say to them, you know, you've got to read and understand it yourself. Don't let anybody preach to you. So I'll sit with them, read the English translation, and we'll have a conversation about it. I'll say, well, you know, when the time comes, you read it yourself. Don't let anybody interpret it to you in any way, you know, because you can speak English and you can understand. And that's not to say don't join Muslim communities or whatever. But the idea for me was about, I didn't want them to be brainwashed in any way, you know. So, so in a way, I've lived my life. I've done what I've wanted with a bit of, with that background that as a Muslim, you have to be good, you have to be kind, you have to give, you have to pray, you know, all the five pillars of Islam, even though I haven't been able to follow all of them. Mm. For whatever reason, the day we buried Mom was the day I started making sure I said my five daily prayers.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why that is. I have no clue. But since that burial, I've always, you know, I can count on one or two fingers, you know, the number of times I haven't said my five times daily prayers.
Oh, wow.
However, I feel like I can still do better because I don't always say them at the right time.
Oh, okay.
And in my mind, I still have that worry, you know, sometimes when it's time to say prayers and I don't say it or I'm late, I'm like, oh, what if God doesn't spare my life long enough to say that prayer, because I haven't, you know, not because I haven't, but, you know, who knows, maybe my time is near and I'm saying, oh, I want to do something else and I've already missed a prayer in that process. So I have those things in my mind, but I don't feel like my faith has in any way held me back. I don't think it has. And why do you ask?
The reason I ask is, I feel, and this is me speaking to you out of love, and as a big brother, that I believe that if you were of the Christian faith, you would have been happily married by now.
Okay.
I'm not saying that there's no Muslim gentleman out there. Mm. You understand? I actually really like Islam. Mm. It is just that I have gone in a different direction. And remember the incident I told you about Dad taking me to the church? Maybe accidentally he planted the seed that day. You understand?
Yeah.
And I believe solely that the reason why no one has been able to step up to the plate is because of your faith. That's my perspective. Okay. It doesn't mean that I'm right, but I still pray that a gentleman will come along that will do the right thing. I don't think it is healthy for a woman to be alone for so long. I deal with a lot of women in my life because of my faith and what I do. I pray with a lot of women. And One of my greatest fears when I first moved to America was that I would sleep and I wouldn't wake up and nobody would find my body. Oh, yeah. When I didn't have a girlfriend, that was one of my very first scares, that should I pass away or they wouldn't find me until my rent was due, or maybe my body was smelling. It crossed my mind, and ever since then I've been lucky that I've been married, I've lived with women, even though I wasn't married at the, so I have that thoughts. It passes down to me when I look out for you. And I have a funny question for you, and this is not to put you on the spot. If a Caucasian guy came along, would you consider?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know.
So.
And the reason I say that, it's not just Caucasian actually, because I've always dated black people.
Okay.
And I have thought about this, that
Okay.
if someone who isn't black came my way,
Okay.
would I date them?
Okay.
But I don't know what the answer is. So even right now, I couldn't tell you yes or no. I guess it might be depends on how I feel.
I say this jokingly to my female friends that on any given Sunday, any man stands a chance. And what I mean by that is, depending on where you find yourself on a Sunday or on a, and your guards are down, all it
I
just
agree.
takes, a man could just even want to test you that, hey, you want to go for a drink?
I
And
agree.
depending on where the conversation goes from that moment, you never know what can happen. But on a serious note, and I never thought about this before this conversation, is that keep an open mind. My wish would have been a nice Muslim guy, but it's not about me. It's what you would desire. I mean, our parents were married for so long, so that's the only thing life one has really known. And talking about books, what are you reading now?
I don't actually read physical books anymore.
Oh
I
boy.
listen on Audible.
Oh boy.
I find it so hard to read. I have a book, what's the name of this guy? I bought the book in October because I went for a reading, a book retreat
Okay.
in October last year, and I thought, okay, let me buy this. I might be able to read it while I'm there. I'm still reading it. I'm still reading it.
So the habit of you sitting down in your bed under duvet reading the book no longer
No
exists?
longer there. I think, yeah, it's not there anymore. All
Okay.
the, I've even tried buying some, and I just, they're just there. I just can't read them. So what I tend to do now, do a lot of listening to podcasts, listening to books, that sort of thing. Did you see the post about James Hadley Chase dying recently?
No, but I wanted to ask you about one book that you read that stands out for you.
For me, it's Rich Dad Poor Dad. No, it's not Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's the Rich Dad's Cash Flow Quadrant, the first
So
one.
is that a financial book or crime?
No, it's financial. It's sort of financial literacy.
Oh, okay.
Most of the books I read these days are business development, financial literacy, personal
Okay.
development. But a biography I actually listened to recently is The Meaning of Mariah Carey. I really liked that.
Okay.
And do you still read?
I haven't read anything in a long time. I haven't read anything lately. There's a book that I keep on looking for. And funny enough, you were the one that gave me the book.
Oh, really?
It was about an American rock star. His initials were either AI or Al. and he had met a lady of the night. And it's deeper than the little I remember, but mm-hmm. I remember you giving the book to me, and I read it back, front to back, you know, I read it, and it was one of the very first novels that I read, and I was like, wow, you know, the guy was a superstar, a rock star, and he met this lady, and he couldn't date her because she was a lady of the night. But over a period of time, things changed, and he was able to find her parents. She didn't know who her mom or dad was, and you know, but from spending time with the rock star, you know, and that was one book that I just remember you giving me the book, and I read it from time to time. So when next are we going to do this? So young woman, thank you very much. I hope we can do this again.
Thank you for making the time.
Listening back to this part reminded me how powerful hindsight can be. Sometimes we don't realize what shaped us until much later. And hearing Hamza talk about faith, mistakes, and money made me reflect on how our own definitions of richness evolve with time. Thank you so much for listening to this second part of my conversation with my brother, Hamza. Together, these two episodes have reminded me that a rich life isn't just about money. It's about family, resilience, gratitude, and the lessons that continue to shape us, no matter how much time has passed. This felt like the perfect way to mark his milestone 60th birthday. Capturing stories, laughter, and reflections we'll both hold on to. If you enjoyed these episodes, I'd love for you to follow Life's Riches wherever you listen to podcasts. Share it with someone who'll connect with it and leave a review. It really helps more people find these conversations. And if you enjoy the kind of honest reflections we've explored here, my book, It's My Life, Lessons Lived, Blessings Found, is now available in paperback and ebook. It's a collection of lived moments and lessons, a reminder that richness shows up in many forms. You can find it through the link in the show notes or at lifesriches.co.uk. Until next time, take care of your money, your mind, and the people who matter most. I'm Aisha, and this has been Life's Riches.